What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Wicked Wives. I'm your host, Alyssa, like always. Tasha, again, isn't with us, so, but I talked to her today, and she wants to record again, so, soon. How was everybody's week so far? I think it's like Wednesday. I might be doing this on Thursday. So, yeah, I have chose this week's episode to be kind of a celebration of Women's Day. Yes, I know I'm late. My bad. I'm still a piece of garbage. But I'm going to try from here on out to get a episode in every Saturday. Yeah. I haven't like came up because like I've been so inconsistent lately, and I'm so sorry guys, because so much crap has been going on in my life, and so I've been dealing with that on top of I just finished my book. It's done. I'm looking for agents, and then I am dealing with this podcast as well, on top of two children. That's driving me bonkers. So it's been great. It's been really great. So yeah, I'm going to try to get, if not Saturday, I'm hoping Friday. I want it to be at the end of the week. It's kind of like a big bang. So keep an eye out for that. I don't know what I'm doing next week. I never know. I just kind of scroll through cases and like one of them looks good and I'm like, oh, hey, okay. But this one stuck out to me. Basically because of her best friend. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about the murder of Angie, as she liked to be called. Seimota, my god. And her badass best friend, Sheila Wysocki. I'm never going to pronounce these names right, so forgive me. I'm doing the best I can, okay? But I'm just going to say this right now. I did not choose this case because of the victim. And although it is, like, an awful case, horrible, and I'm really sorry for the victim, but what pulled me in the most was her fucking best friend. Because Jesus Christ, she is a badass. She's amazing. So, and you're gonna see why, I promise. We're gonna be talking a lot about her and this other guy I'll introduce soon. So, it's great. But if you don't know about this case, awesome. If you do know about this case, just enjoy the ride, I guess. And we're gonna jump into it. So, our victim was Angela, and this takes place in 1984. And she was about 20 years old, and she was a college student at Southern Methodist University in Dallas. This is actually where she met Sheila in their freshman year. At first, they didn't get along, I guess, because Angie was dating an asshat. But after they broke up, Sheila and Angie became way closer and even roomed together for a bit before Angie got her own apartment off campus. So they were like rooming together for a little bit, and then Angie was like, I'm gonna go do me for a little bit, but you're still my best friend, and got an apartment all by herself. It was like on the second floor. Angie was studying computer science and electrical engineering, and Sheila was actually a psych major at the time, which is crazy for the 80s. Not a lot of women did stuff like that, you know. They were into cosmetology and designing, and yeah, they were crazy. One night, Angie wanted to go out and relax with some drinks before a big football game the next morning that she was going to attend, which is something she loved to do. She was a huge people person, and her smile would literally light up a room. And when you see her photo, you absolutely agree. She has the most gorgeous, heartwarming smile ever I've ever seen. Sheila, her best friend didn't want to go because she didn't drink, she didn't party, she was kind of a homebody. Like me, I don't want to go outside either. People. Ew. So, since Sheila didn't want to go, Angie ended up calling her other friend, Anita, and met up with a friend named Russell Buchanan to see if they wanted to go instead. And they both said yes. They're like, hell yeah, let's go. And they met up and went to Lakewood's Boardwalk Beach Club, where they would have some drinks and dance. And I guess this was like an occurring thing. They went out, they drank, they had fun, they danced. They danced, they laughed, they carried on. Okay. brought in some Hercules humor there. You don't get it. I don't know if we can be friends, man. Okay, anyway. Angie ended up getting them into a private club upstairs called the Rio Room. And the friends that she was with said that she was walking around tables talking to everyone like she knew all of them. She was being very friendly. She was, you know, drinking, having fun, laughing, dancing, the whole nine yards. She was having the time of their life. And then when they left about 1 a.m., the staff said that Angie looked fine. She didn't look drunk. She didn't look a little sloppy, nothing. Like, she looked fine. Now, Russell was left at his apartment, and Anita was supposed to stay the night with Angie. But since Angie was going to wake up early in the morning and go to that football game, Anita decided not to, which she probably, I don't know, she might have regretted it, and she might have been a little happy she made that decision, because this night was a horrible one. And if she did spend the night, I don't know, maybe there would be two bodies instead of one. It's crazy to think about, but it's those life choices, you know, like you don't know which choice is gonna lead you which way. It's crazy. You know how many choices you've made in your life? What if one of them ended in like murder or something crazy, and then you're like, yeah, I'm kind of glad I didn't pick that one, or damn, you know? Anyway, Angie ended up dropping Anita off, and then she actually drove 30 minutes away to visit her boyfriend to say goodnight. Ben McCall, which was her boyfriend, said she showed up and they talked at the door for a minute before she left for home. Now, at first I was like, why didn't she go inside or even like stay the night? It's like 1:30 at this point, and you didn't let her in the house, you know? But then I remembered it's the 80s, you know, things were different when it came to relationships. Like today, you probably don't think twice when your girlfriend comes to spend the night with you. You're like, hell yeah, let's go. I call the couch, you know, like whatever. But back then it was kind of like, it didn't look good. You probably didn't want to spend the night with your boyfriend or girlfriend until marriage, because apparently that was a big no-no. So yeah, I was like, okay, I get it. Anyway, I digress. Around 1:45, Ben woke up to his phone ringing. So I guess he went right to sleep after she left or something. I don't know. But his phone was ringing. It was Angie. And the first thing she said as soon as he answered the phone was, talk to me. Which immediately I would be like, oh, what's wrong? And that's what he was. He was like, what's going on? Why do you need to talk to me? And eventually Angie said that a man had knocked on the door and asked to use the phone in the bathroom. But now she was feeling a little nervous. The article I read said that she actually asked Ben if he knew about a payphone nearby, and Ben told her yes, and she told the man about the payphone, like, hey, so my boyfriend says there's a payphone nearby, you can go there, blah, 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 and then she told Ben, okay, look, I'm gonna call you right back, and hung up. Okay, she didn't call back. Shocker. I know, they never do. Every time someone says, that's gonna be a fucking life rule right now, Anytime anyone ever says, I'm gonna call you right back, they don't, okay? Don't ever say that. They're not gonna call you back. I've been guilty of this, okay? I forget, but she didn't call back. And after a few calls to Angie with no answer, Ben decided to hop in his truck and race to her apartment. And while he was running or racing to her apartment, he was calling her on his car phone with no luck. She still wasn't answering. And yes, cell phones weren't really a thing, but he was in construction and he actually had a phone hooked up inside of his truck. So that was kind of nice. So he had a car phone. When he got there, he actually ran up to her apartment, which again, second floor. He knocked and yelled for her with absolutely no answer. Like it was quiet. I was gonna say it was dead, but that not a good choice of words. Oh. Anyway, the article said that he went to the payphone to see if she might have been there, but she wasn't. So he returned to her apartment, called the police on his car phone, and then went back in to continue to bang on the door and try to get her attention. So when the officers arrived, there was actually a rookie among them, and as soon as they got there, they said that they knew something was terribly wrong. Like as soon as they got there, there was like dread in the air. You just had this heavy feeling of like shit's not right, you know? So they actually kicked down the door and swarmed the house, finding their worst fear was actually true. They found Angie's naked body, face down on the bed with her eyes wide open. The autopsy would later reveal, and this is a little messed up, so just brace yourselves. The autopsy revealed that she was stabbed 18 times through her lungs and heart as well. Side note, right before I reveal the side note. The cops said that the time of her death was right when Ben was knocking on the door. So while he was knocking on the door trying to get Angie's attention, they think the killer was still inside the apartment, stabbing her and killing her. So, isn't that like heart-wrenching? Like that's horrible. Like I can't even imagine how Ben felt when he heard that, 'cause you know he had to have known that theory. I mean, it's all over the news. Come on. It's horrible. The autopsy also revealed, and this one is kind of like I said, brace yourself. This is the oop. She was stabbed so hard in the heart, like the killer stabbed her so hard, it was literally yanked out of her chest cavity. It was yanked out of her chest cavity. So she was laying on the bed. 18 stab wounds with her heart on her chest. Now, Morbid, it's a true crime podcast. If you don't follow them and you don't listen to them, why? And two, they're amazing. You should go check them out. I have the link down in the sources because I am going to, I cite all my work every single episode, so you know where I went, got all my stuff from. Morbid said that when they ran the semen and DNA, they found that the semen was a secretor. Now, how they explained it was pretty much a secretor sperm wouldn't reveal anything about the person, including blood type, so it was pretty much useless. Only 20% of the world's population is a secretor as well. So that's like a really low number, like crazy. It's rare. So it's pretty much a dud sperm. It's kind of, yeah. After testing Ben, and they even tested Angie's ex, the one that she broke up with, and her best friend didn't like. It turns out they were non-secretors and cleared. So they were fine. However, they also tested Russell, the guy that she went out with that night, and he turned out to be a secretor. Also, side note, little tidbit here, he lived 5 minutes away from Angie. 5 minutes away from her. So, obviously, police immediately went to his house to find him still dressed in from his job. It was like he was in a suit and everything. I don't remember what they said he did for a job, but he was trying to be an architect, which he eventually is. I'll talk about that later. But yeah, he was still dressed. When they told him about Angie and like what happened, he was shocked. And this is like a couple days after the murder, and he was like shocked. He had no idea. He explained that he hasn't seen the news because he went straight to a wedding. Then he went to Houston to visit family. So right off the bat, this is kind of like, okay, sure, yeah, that's a great cover-up. But then again, this is in the 80s, and there's not a lot of technology. And even if you did have a TV back then, you're so used to not having TV. Like, I mean, people are constantly going and living their life. Like, it's not really rare that people don't watch TV back then. Now you can't get people away from a TV, but back then it wasn't a big deal. And honestly, I believe it, because in today, I do not watch the news. I refuse to watch the news. My husband and his dad is like all about news, all about like up in the business. But me, I cannot stand watching the news. Like, it's filled with bullshit, it's filled with murder, it's filled with stupid shit that I just can't even deal with. So I don't even watch it. So I get it. I get you, Russell. However, the cops would pick Russell up from his work and his job to interrogate him. They would hound him for hours on end. And one detective even made him look at the crime scene photos, saying that he wanted to have sex with her, and, like, she didn't. So he followed her to her house and forced himself onto her. Because remember, she was raped, and, yeah. And then, like, when he forced himself on her, she started screaming, and that's when he stabbed her. That's what they were going with. And he said that it was the worst thing he had to go through, and it was horrific. Like, it was really scarring. He ended up taking a polygraph test because he's like, I didn't do this. Like, stop. I don't understand what you're not understanding. It wasn't me. He took a polygraph test, which, again, never do. They are terrible. Can't stress that enough. But he passed it. He passed it flying colors. But the police were saying that he didn't, even though he did. So, he ended up, I was lost in my notes for a second. he ended up getting a lawyer, because obviously he was like, they're gonna blame me no matter what I say or do, so I need to lawyer up just in case they try to pull some shit, because obviously they're going to. But the lawyer he ended up getting, his name was Richard Haynes, also known as Racehorse. I know, weird fucking nickname, but okay. But this lawyer was known for taking on cases where the defendant was guilty. So if you're guilty and you need a great lawyer, you need to go to Richard. And everyone did. So as soon as they found out who Russell's lawyer was, they immediately was like, okay, so he's definitely guilty. I mean, obviously. And another bad thing that I didn't add and did not look good at all was a crazy coincidence that his house was actually littered with knives and blades because his roommate actually just got home from an African safari trip. So when the police came into his house and was like, "Hey, what the fuck is going on in your house?" And there's like knives everywhere, and considering how she was killed, it did not look good. And Russell even said that. He's like, "Okay, look, this isn't really a good look for me, but I swear to God, my friend just got home from an African safari trip. That's it." So, not a good look, but I mean, hey, it's crazy. Coincidences happen, right? And the police honestly didn't have any solid evidence on him except for he was a secreter. So they ended up putting him on surveillance. Now, here's the kicker. He was actually supposed to leave the country originally because he got accepted into a school in London. So the clock was ticking for Russell. They wouldn't have him anymore after they left. He left. Like, 'cause like I said, they don't have anything for him. All they have is that he's a secreter. They don't have prints. They don't have DNA. Nothing. So eventually, after interrogating him some more, he left the country. He went to school. He studied architecture. And that's kind of when the case went cold, honestly. But we're gonna kind of go back because now that we're done talking about Russell, we're going to talk about Angie's badass best friend, Sheila. I fucking love her. Okay, I love her to death. Oh my God. So she originally got the phone call Angie was dead from, I think it was Anita. Anita was the other girl who called. Or sorry, who went out with Angie that night. She called Angie sobbing to the point where she can't even speak. All she said was, "It's Angie," and, or yeah, it's Angie. And Sheila was like, "Is she dead?" And Sheila's like, "I don't even know why I asked, is she dead?" But that's just how I felt. Like it was something so bad that I just said, "Is she dead?" So now, like I said, we're rewinding a little bit because. Because before Russell left and they realized they're not gonna have anything on him, they started talking to Angie's friends and family, including Sheila. Now, Sheila, they asked her if she would be comfortable enough to meet up with Russell and talk to him with a wire. Of course, Miss Queen said yes, that's fine, let's do it. However, in police-like fashion, they fed her lies, saying that he failed the polygraph test and a bunch of other bullshit, making her think that this guy is the man who killed my best friend and I'm about to go have dinner with him. Sheila's mom even begged her not to go because she was terrified. I mean, I'm honestly, yeah, I would be too. I mean, he supposedly just killed her best friend. I'd be too. So, and or Sheila kept a brave face, she kept calm. She went to the meeting and got him to talk about it, but his story stayed the same. His story stays the same to this day. Like, he never changed his story at all. And when Sheila came back, she told the police that. She's like, "His story didn't change. I don't know what to tell you." So this is where it goes cold because they have nothing. Sheila ended up moving to Tennessee, got married, and had two boys who actually help her later. So that's great. This sounds like the end, but it's really not, I promise. It's the beginning, actually. One night while Sheila was doing homework for Bible study, she said she looked up and saw Angie standing at the foot of her bed smiling. And she's like, I know it sounds crazy, but there she was. I wasn't dreaming. I know what I saw. And she said that in her mind, she knew, like, she had to do something. She said it was time. I couldn't sit by and let the killer walk around anymore. This is Angie saying, hey, he's out there. You can do it. You can find him. And she picked the phone up immediately and started calling the police station over and over and over again. She even got her old sorority friends and colleagues to call as well. And within 1 year, she called them over 750 times about this case. 750 times she called and bugged the fuck out of them to open this case back up. When she finally did get a police officer, they told her in 20 years, not one person called about this case. Nobody. And Sheila was quoted saying, think about that. Not one person. How can someone die such a violent death and no one call and want to know why and want to know who? That still makes me cry. Which, seriously, like, where was Angie's family? Like, where was Angie's friends? Like, she was such an amazing person. Nobody was bugging the hell out of them to see what happened or get justice for her. Are you serious? Okay. That blows my mind. Like, it blows my mind. And I'm so upset with the Houston police or wherever the fuck this is. I think it's not in Houston. I think it's back in Dallas. Yeah, Dallas. So pissed at them. You'll understand why later. I'll explain. And you'll probably be mad too. But wait for it. So she also said that they thought she would just go away. You know, she's just some crazy lady calling over and over again. But she was persistent. She did not give up. And she wasn't going to give up until she got her damn answers. Which, yes, girl, fucking get it. She ended up saying, screw it, and investigated on her own. She even made a war room. That's what she called it. Where she would have papers everywhere about the case, and she would go in there and look everything over when she wanted to find holes in the case. Which, morbid, how they explained it was, like, the whole board with red wires connecting from here to here and here to here. Like, it's so perfect, because that's literally what she had. She had a war room. And it's so great. So, she lived in this huge gated community. And this is important to know because it comes up. Sorry, I hit my mic. Oop. But she was in this huge gated community. And it had security. And the security was actually really close with her because she would ask questions. And, you know, she would tell them what she's doing and she's trying to investigate. And they, like, were encouraging her, like, hell yes, figure it out. You got this. And one day she was in the war room and she found a connection that nobody else did. I couldn't find what the connection was. I don't really think it's that important. But her husband came up and was like, you know, you'd make a great private investigator. And that's exactly what she did. This awesome person decided, you know what? I'm going to do that. I'm going to become a private investigator so I can solve this case myself because nobody else is. And she fucking went to school and she studied to get her PI license. I'm going to say PI, but just so you know, it's private investigative license, you know? Yeah, okay. She would even have her teenage sons read her laws at the dinner table, and she would have to read them back just so she could memorize them. Now, in Tennessee, which is where she moved to, you have to be sponsored by someone or some company in order to get a PI license. So this is where the security company comes in place, because they actually stepped up and sponsored her and even went further as taking her under their wing. I can't even talk. I'm so like, it's crazy. I can't even talk. They even took her under their wing and trained her a little bit, which is flipping insane. Like, I can't even, like, it's awesome. She's such a badass bitch. Like, oh, Tasha, if you listening, if I get murdered and you don't become a PI to investigate my murder, then I don't know. I'm gonna be upset. I'm gonna haunt you. I'm gonna haunt you, like, girl, what are you doing? So anyway, she took the test and passed, obviously. So she got her license, and she thought, since the police weren't taking her seriously as a citizen, surely they have to take her seriously as a PI. Of course they didn't, though. They didn't give two shits. They're just like, oh, okay. Congrats. Woo. However, to get her out of their hair, they did reopen the case. They did. They actually assigned another woman detective. Her name was Detective Linda Crum. And they assigned her to the case to help her, figure out who killed Angie. So these two queens were about to take this head on and solve this themselves. They're like, you know what? You guys don't want to do it, and you're not doing your job. We're gonna do it for you. Like, sit back and watch how it's done. I just, hell yes. So the first thing Linda told her about the case, about Sheila, about the case, was, and this is what made me mad, okay, with the police force. This is what pissed me off. Linda literally got the case files, called Sheila, and was like, guess what? There's still DNA here that can be tested. 20 years later, and they still have DNA that can be tested. Like, excuse me. Like, they apparently told Sheila that the DNA was lost and they don't have any to test. So they had her fingernails, by the way, which was DNA, and then they still had some of the semen, and that's DNA. They were literally just lazy and didn't want to run the DNA again. Nobody called in 20 years. Nobody cared. So why should they, right? I mean, that's why I'm pissed. Like, you guys were just fucking lazy. Like, you had the DNA. New technology came out. But because nobody was calling and nobody was giving a shit about this case, then why should they? And that's the reason why so many cold cases go unsolved. People forget about them. People don't talk about them. And then it's like, okay, whatever. Nobody cares about this case, so it's whatever. People just forgot about it. No. There's still people out there waiting for them to find justice for these fucking cold cases, but your ass is too lazy eating donuts to figure out what the hell to do. You're just sitting there with your thumb up your ass, like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. There's DNA here, but I don't know if we should run it. Probably not. Like, fuck you guys. Fuck you guys. There's still people out there that wanted the truth. But don't worry, Sheila and Linda's about to do it for you. The ladies sent over the DNA to be tested and sadly had to wait a little bit until the results came back, because that's normal, but sucks. When it did, though, Linda called Sheila immediately and said, we got him. Immediately, which, ooh, spooks, chills, beautiful. Yes. Now, okay, Sheila spent all of the 20 years hating Russell because she was absolutely positive Russell was his man, their man. And honestly, do you guys think Russell is the killer? Do you? Because I thought I did for a second. I was like, you know. But, however, she was ready to hear Russell's name match the DNA. But the DNA did not belong to Russell. It wasn't his. The DNA belonged to a man named Donald Andrew Bess. And now Sheila felt guilty and upset because she hated an innocent man for so long. So, wow. Wasn't Russell, guys. Guess that polygraph was telling the truth now, huh? All right, now that we talked about Sheila and her badassery, we're gonna kind of briefly, very quickly, talk about the piece of shit known as Donald Bess. When he was discovered with the DNA and they like put it two and two together, 20 fucking years later, he was 59 at the time. So, yeah. He was already in prison, by the way, a life sentence in prison for three sexual assault charges. So he's already in prison for sexual assault for his whole entire life. When they investigated further, they actually found out that he was on parole at the time of Angie's murder. So what they think happened was that Donald was at the Rio room that night that Angie was. And he saw her, you know, talking and carrying on and like fell in love with her, which honestly, like I said, she's gorgeous. Once you see the picture, you're gonna be like, understandable. And, but he took it creepy stalker further and followed her home, which is a no-no. And then that's where he asked to come in, and when he saw his time to strike, he did. The day of the trial, Angie actually, or not Angie, sorry, blah, blah, blah. Sheila drove 650 miles to see him sentenced. She was like, I need to see this piece of shit fry. I need to see him go to prison for the rest of his life for what he's done to my best friend. So she drove 650 miles to see that bitch in jail. The jury deliberated for only an hour. Didn't even take longer than an hour to find him guilty, obviously. And the judge ended up giving him the death penalty, which he tried to appeal, but it was denied, thankfully. Like, no, we're not doing that shit. I guess you can always appeal when there's a death sentence involved, which is, I mean, good and bad, I guess. But I still, yeah. He shouldn't have done it. Like, stupid. Like, you knew you did it. You're obviously guilty. Shut the fuck up. You're death sentence. another note I want to add. This one is like, are you fucking kidding me? To how much of a monster he really truly is. One of his sexual assault victims, because like I said, he had three sexual assault charges. One of them was actually after Angie's death. So if killing Angie and like raping her and killing her wasn't enough, after he was done with that, sometime in the 20 years, he did it again. I don't know if the girl died, but he sexually assaulted someone else and then got life in prison. Like, fucking monster. Are you serious? But as of right now, Donald Bess is still on death row, awaiting his time. And that's where he's sitting right now. So, yay, we got justice! Clap, 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 clap. Bitch in jail, bitch in jail. Okay, so, I'm gonna tell you a little bit about the, Russell. I'm gonna talk about him for a little bit because, you know, him, Russell and Sheila. So after everything was done, little tidbits about the two. Sheila planned to retire from the PI title, but she started receiving letters from people all over that was like, please help me. I have this, this, and this. I'm in severe need. please help. And she decided that she's gonna stick to it. She liked doing what she could to help people, and she stayed on as a PI, like the angel she is. Jesus. Beautiful woman. Anyway, Russell, like I said, is a very successful architect, and he's won many awards for his work and even displayed in magazines. Like, I guess he makes box houses and modern houses and even artwork and stuff, which is cool. He is married with kids, and this is a funny story, kind of. Like, it's kind of funny, but it's kind of not. When he met his wife, he actually had to tell her about the case and was like, "Hey, so these cops think I did something really bad, but I didn't. I just wanted you to know, just in case something were to pop up, and I didn't want to explain myself." Like, funny. It's a little funny now that, he's not really our killer, and it's like, huh, that's funny, but it's really not. It's actually kind of sad. But yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there. I also want to put in here too, when it was revealed that he didn't do it, the police chief of Dallas actually called him and apologized for how they treated him. He was like, "Dude, I'm so sorry. Like, we put you through some shit. I can't even imagine." And Russell is a great sport because he was like, "No, I don't blame you at all. Like, if that was my daughter or sister or anyone, loved one missing, I would want you to do the same thing to the piece of shit that did it. Like, to find whoever did it. I don't blame you. I totally understand." And I'm just like, man, what an awesome person, like, goddamn, get it. So Sheila now wanted to apologize to Russell as well, because, like I said, she always thought it was him, found out it wasn't, crazy, and she felt so guilty. So they actually met up for like an interview, I think, about the case, and she, apologized to him, and again, he was like, "No, really, I understand. It's okay. I got it. Like, I'm not even upset about it." Which, amazing man. I mean, come on. Really. How awesome is he? But yeah, guys, that's the quick case of Angela Angie. So, I hope you guys enjoyed it. Okay, so like I said, wrapping up, thanks for listening. I love you guys. You guys are awesome. I'm going to try and do every single week on a Thursday or a Friday or Saturday. Either one. Friday, Saturday. Haven't decided yet. I want to do it Saturday, but I feel like that's too long for you guys to wait for a fucking episode. So I feel bad. So it might come Friday. It might come a little early. But definitely Saturday. I'm gonna shoot for Saturdays because I love you and you guys all deserve consistency, and I'm a piece of garbage and I haven't been doing consistency at all. I'm so sorry. But yeah. Hopefully Tasha will be joining us next episode. I really hope she does. I miss her to fucking hell and back. I'm actually gonna be going to Ohio soon to see her because we're going to a Fleetwood Mac show and I'm fucking ready for it. I'm so ready at the end of this month. I think it's like the 27th, and I'm like, yes. Yes. So, that'll be fun. I might have to do an early episode on that week because I don't think I'm gonna be. Yeah. Anyway, I'll figure it out. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this quick little episode. If you want, follow us on Instagram. I don't post a lot there, but if you are awesome, go follow our Twitter because that's where I post most of the pictures and stuff, which I will post pictures as well about this and the piece of garbage that killed her. So, we also have a Facebook. I'd post there too, but I mean, I'm mostly on Twitter. Literally go to the Twitter and do it. If I get more followers, maybe I'll get do a bonus episode. Maybe. If you follow the Twitter, go follow the Twitter. All right, okay. All right. I love you guys. Stay wicked. Bye.